This is the Self-Defined Human Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Corman. We don't know what we're going to talk about today because here's the thing. It's all gone haywire. The whole thing is just totally unraveled. So we're going to talk about why I deleted all my Instagram followers. Why I deleted all my Instagram followers. I did this a few days ago. Was it a week ago? 2 weeks ago? I don't know. It was something that had to be done. It was what it was. Some people are going to have a problem with it. I know it. I know I'm going to have to deal with a lot of that. You know, when you do stuff like that, the rescuers come out of the woodwork and they try to rescue you. They try to say, Michael, why did you do it? Michael, did you really have to do that? Etc., etc., etc. But the fact is that what we're doing here is not anything to concern anybody else. Because what I'm doing here is running a business. And I'm trying to learn how to run a business. And when you're running a business, you have to make decisions. That's the thing. And not everybody understands that. But tough decisions need to be made. You got to do things that are sometimes might be seen as being drastic. But it's the only way. And especially if you're learning how to run a business, what you have to do is you have to make drastic decisions and see what happens as a result. If you know a better way, I'd love to hear it. I'll probably give you a hard time and call you a rescuer. Because you probably don't really know a better way. You're probably just trying to rescue me. But I don't want to hear it. So that's what we do here. It's all a practice. And what that means is, that doesn't mean it's okay to make mistakes. See, mistakes can have horrible consequences. The point is not to forgive yourself. Like, that's not, no. See, we don't forgive ourselves. You make mistakes that could be horrible mistakes. And what you do is you learn from mistakes. Because if you don't push buttons, then nothing happens. And you don't learn anything. So this is not about relaxing. It's not about taking it easy. It's not about nap time. It's not about self-care. All of that is emotional avoidance. What this is about is about making mistakes and seeing what happens. It's about destroying things that you care about. You know, it took me over a year to build up all those followers. But I think that a lot of them were the wrong followers. I don't know. I have no idea. I probably wouldn't do it again. I probably wouldn't delete all my followers again. But the freedom to do it is definitely a prize that's worth having achieved. Because now I have that, and nobody can ever take that away from me, ever again. From this point onward, I will always be somebody who is capable of deleting all of his Instagram followers. See, I agonized over that for a long time. And now I can do it, should I ever need it. You know, it's like the nuclear launch button. Like, I have that option now. Didn't have it before. Is that worth something? I think it is. What is it worth? Not exactly sure. But there's something about it where it's because as I was doing it, I felt like I was jumping off a cliff. And after I did it, I felt horrible. I felt like I had just thrown away everything. Like I just like killed everybody in my life. And that's how I felt for the whole night. But I knew that feeling was itself the prize. That was the void that had been hitherto unexplored and unknown to me. And now it's known. It's known territory. So I have reactions in my nervous system that are now there, that are equipped to deal with that void. They're ready to go, should I ever need them. I mean, seriously, let's imagine that there's let's say something that's worse than COVID. Okay, so this is, I'm recording this in June of 2021, for those who are listening in the Michael Corman archives in the Smithsonian 100 years from now. As the COVID pandemic is winding down, supposedly. But let's say there's a worse virus that shows up, something really horrible, something that kills almost everybody. Like in Stephen King's The Stand, one of the best books I've ever read. Love that book. The Stand is, I read it when I was in college. It's like 1,000 pages. And he originally published it, I think it was in the 70s. He published it was like 500 pages. It was the shorter version of it because his publisher said, no, there's no way you're gonna publish a novel that's 1,000 pages. Because he was an unknown author at the time. It was one of his first books. And so he published it and, you know, whatever, okay. And then he had a whole career and was really famous. And then he decided to release the whole entire thing. And that's the version I read. But it's about a virus that wipes out almost the entire world's population. So as COVID was starting, you can bet that this book was running through my head. But let's suppose that happened. So if everybody were wiped out in some kind of new plague, something that would destroy the whole population, almost. Okay, see, I've already been through that because I've killed everybody already. When it comes, so Jordan Peterson, you know, I've heard him talk sometimes about responsibility. And it's like, you know, the way to get more, I don't know how he puts it, the way to get more meaning, more freedom, something, is you take on more responsibility. See, this is the point. Now, some people are going to say, well, Michael, but why would you take on more responsibility? Why should I have to take on more responsibility? Like, why should I have to? Well, see, here's the thing. You should try to be the best at everything that you do. So I've been listening to, been watching boot camp videos lately, and in the Marines, there's a speech that they give where they go, the guy's like, a Marine always strives to be the best at everything he does. Something like that. And that's the point, you know? You should strive to be the best at everything you do. But Michael, why do I have to be the best? Like, shouldn't I accept my mistakes? Shouldn't I accept myself for being second best? Yeah, sure, accept yourself for being second best, but you should strive to be the best. Like, the reason people have a problem with this is because they are doing things that they didn't ever make the decision to do. See, there's where your problem is. Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning, his book. He was a psychiatrist who was in a Nazi concentration camp. and he was curious as to why it is that people around him, some people around him just totally, they got depressed, they got angry, and they got violent, and they just imploded, and they didn't survive. They didn't survive psychologically, and other people did. It's a very interesting question. You know, why is it that some people go through horrible traumas in their lives? Some people are abused as children, and they turn out fine, and other people don't. It's a very interesting question. I don't think it's too mysterious. The difference seems to be, it's not just about resilience, it's about the way that you are telling the story. If you tell the story in such a way that you have to implode at the end of it, because you're just going about living your life and other people are doing all these awful things to you, see, that's very different than you being the hero of the story, where you are making a decision to go out on an adventure, and on the way, horrible things happen to you. Yes, they do. But you keep going, and eventually you slay the dragon, you find the treasure, you save the princess, you, I don't know, what do? See, that is the way you want to look at it. But most people don't do that. So when you tell them to take on more responsibility, they say, why should I have to do that? Why is it my responsibility? Well, maybe that's not your responsibility. Maybe you should find a different responsibility. You know, there's many ways to do it. But you should be the one making that decision. It shouldn't be made for you. You know, if you're going through your life and people are, you know, it's just like, write a book about it. See, that's what Viktor Frankl did. He wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning, An Introduction to Logotherapy. I think the book was originally written in German. I'm not really sure. So that might not be the actual title. But he wrote a book because he said when he was in the concentration camp, he said, okay, my meaning here, you know, he could, you know, rather than be a victim. Now, you got to understand is that he is a victim. You know, he was forced to be there against his will. He didn't have a decision in that. It was forced on him. But see, the difference between a victim and a creator here is not about, it's not about your external circumstances. It's about how you are responding to those circumstances. So when you say, yes, I'm a victim, like, yeah, I'm a victim. You know, I was basically kidnapped, forced onto a train, and taken to this camp. I'm not allowed to leave. They'll shoot me if I try to leave. You're a victim, sure. But the question is, okay, so how does that, we're talking about the narrative here. It's the story that matters. Like, how are you telling the story? Because the same thing happened to Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade and in The Temple of Doom. And I don't remember the first movie as well, but okay, continue this in a minute. When you're learning a skill, there are three stages that you go through. So let's talk about music. I always want to generalize everything so much because that's how I look at the world. But let's just talk about music here. Let's just talk about music. You, when you're learning a skill, there are three stages you go through, okay? Now, I'm kind of basing this on a number of things. I'm basing this on Marshall Rosenberg's three stages of emotional liberation. Marshall Rosenberg was the founder of nonviolent communication, and he had three stages, okay, that you go through. So the first stage is what he calls emotional slavery. The second stage is the obnoxious stage. And the third stage is emotional liberation. So in the first stage, you believe that you are responsible for other people's feelings. In the second stage, you're like, no, I'm not responsible. It's not my problem. It's your problem. That's why it's called the obnoxious stage, because you get very obnoxious. And in the third stage is emotional liberation, where you are responsible for your own feelings, and you let other people be responsible for themselves, and you can make decisions based on what you're trying to go after. So those are the three stages. The thing is that these three stages they're applicable in so many different domains. So I was listening to Joe Rogan on Jordan Peterson's podcast, and they had a conversation where there's a two-part conversation. I can't remember if this is the second part or the first. I think it's the second part where they talk about this. And it's Joe is saying, he's talking about how he learned stand-up comedy and how he got good at that. And he looks at his career in three stages. And I'm like, oh, those are the same three stages. So the first stage is like, you're really scared and you're trying to, you know, you're worried that you're not funny. And so you're just, you know, you're trying to make people laugh, and you're trying to, you know, you're just trying to survive. And in the second stage, you get to a point where you're just doing what you think is funny. And in the third stage, I'm trying to remember how he described it. I can't remember how he described it. It sounded very similar to what Rosenberg was saying. And so this, to me, is, you know, I think about when learning a skill like playing the piano, and you go through the same three stages. Now, I'm also basing this to some degree on spiral dynamics, where you go through different phases. These are different values that you have. And, you know, you go from one, so there's in spiral dynamics, there's different colors, okay? So there's beige, purple, red, blue, orange, green, yellow, and turquoise, okay? So there's tier one and there's tier two. Tier one is beige through green, so beige, purple, red, blue, orange, green. That's tier one, and tier two is yellow and turquoise. And there's kind of a progression there too, in some sense, that you go from blue. It's sort of a fractal. So, but there's like, you go blue, orange, green, or blue. There's like blue, orange, and then into green, like orange, green, and then into yellow, turquoise. Okay, so there's like, if you break it into three phases in the same kind of way, you know, when you look at our society, everybody is in like, everything that you see in our society for the most part is like, it's blue, orange, green. There's so much of that, okay? But if you kind of zoom out a little bit, like, stage one is where you're very concerned about other people, and you're very concerned about how other people view you. In stage two, you're more concerned about your own thing, okay? In stage three, you become independent of the ego in that way. So you're focused only on what works and what doesn't work. Now, the language that I use here is it's my language, okay? And it's probably not going to work very well, because I tend to speak in very simplistic language. I don't like to use complicated language, because it doesn't really make sense to me. Complicated language is, you know, I don't know. I mean, complicated language it doesn't matter. We're not even going to go into that. I don't know how to speak, so it's just, you know, you're going to have to deal with it. As long as you pay me the money, that's all I care about. So I hope that this is helpful for people. When you're learning the piano, so in stage one, you're going to be concerned with, you want to make sure that your teacher is happy with you. You want to make sure that that you look good compared to your peers. You want to make sure that you're doing what's correct, okay? That you are, so you're going to be very fixated on correctness. You're very fixated on the rules that you're supposed to be following. So you have to make sure you do what it says in the music. You have to make sure you do what Mozart said to do, what Beethoven said to do, the black and white that they wrote down. You have to make sure that you are sticking to it religiously. That's phase one, stage one, okay? And you have to make sure that, you know, you please the teacher. You have to make sure that the teacher doesn't criticize you, that doesn't get on your case about anything. And if they do, then you're in big trouble. You're going to be basing all your decisions on what you think is right according to this external authority, okay? Because you're in a state of intense fear, and you probably don't realize that when you're in stage one, because you learned this when you were a little kid, and so you just kind of grew up that way, and you think it's normal, and maybe it is normal, but you think it's the way it's supposed to be or the way it has to be, and that's not true. Then at some point you go into stage two, because you realize the limitations of stage one. You realize that just trying to please everyone else isn't really accomplishing anything. So you go into stage two, and in stage two, you're going to be more concerned with doing your own thing. And that means that you might rebel against authority. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to rebel, because another thing you might do is you might put aside the reliance on authority, and instead you might turn to the reliance on external evidence, external standards that are not authorities but are still nonetheless external standards. So you might get obsessed with your performance, the quality of your performance. You might get obsessed with competition. You might have this idea that the goal is to win. You'll do things like you'll start cheating. I mean, people in stage two will cheat because they are fixated with the idea of winning, with the idea of that an external metric of their performance is of what is of value, and they're not really reliant on authority, so they kind of invent their own game and try to excel at that game. And so that's stage two. You know, you might get obsessed with science. You might get obsessed with efficiency, with trying to find the right way to do things, independent of what authorities have told you to do. Okay, that's stage two. And I'm corresponding this with like orange in spiral dynamics, and then green as well. Okay, kind of going into green a little bit. I guess I would kind of put orange and green kind of in stage two, sort of. That you will also in stage two, this is the other part of stage two, and I'm blending, this is not literally spiral dynamics, because I'm blending things together here. Because I want to make the point that what you're doing now is you're breaking free of external authority, and you're relying solely on your own ego. So another thing you'll do is you'll start talking about the way you feel, okay? You'll get people in this stage will get obsessed with their own feelings. And they'll start, you'll get obsessed if you notice that you have performance anxiety. You'll start fixating on that, and like that's the problem. You got to get rid of the performance anxiety. Got to do what feels good. You'll start to idolize your feelings in that way. That's stage two. And you'll rebel against authority in the sense that you'll say, well, the authority, they're just control freaks. They're just trying to, what do they know? They don't know what's best for me. And so you'll say, I'm going to do what feels good. I'm going to practice self-care. That's all stage two, the obnoxious stage. And then at some point you realize the limitations of stage two and you graduate into stage three, which I'm equating with tier two in spiral dynamics, which is, so this is where you break free of the ego here, and you look at your own performance in terms of, in your own behavior, in terms of what is effective and what isn't effective. And so you realize that you are in a system and that you are capable of making your own rules about what you're trying to accomplish. So you don't have to, the rules do not have to be given from on high, and they don't have to be chosen to rebel against that which is given from on high. Okay, the rules can be chosen. They're not external, they are internal, and you get, but it's not based on your feelings, okay? It's based on whatever it's based on, okay? You are the creator of the rules, and so you get to decide what the game is, and that's the game, that's the entirety of it, okay? So you, there's no need to win according to anybody else's game, okay? So we all go through all these stages all the time, and so there's no, it's not like you're gonna permanently go into stage three and then you're there forever. There are parts of you, even if you get into stage three, there are parts of you that are still in stage one. So you wanna, you know, you wanna bring all of them up to stage three over the course of your life, and it may take time. It's not necessarily, it's not like it's just one and then, you know, it's not that you just do it and then it's it. It's like you have to do it over and over and over again. So that's the three stages. So when music students and when I say students, I'm not talking about, like, I'm talking about you, okay? Like, don't talk to me, like, if you're a music teacher listening to this, don't be like, oh yeah, those students are so stupid. No. By the words music student, I'm not talking about, I don't mean the people who are paying you for lessons. I mean, I'm talking about you, the people who do music, okay? Anybody. I'm talking about people who are learning music. And that's, it's not that you don't ever learn music, you know, music is something you learn forever, so... I don't mean to use the word music student, the term music student, in any way other than, you know, just it's not a music teacher, but you might be a teacher at some other parts of your life, but that's not what we're talking about here. You know, you think you're some kind of consistent entity, but you're not. You have different roles that you play. So don't talk to me like, well, I'm a teacher, I'm not a student. Oh, okay. That's not true. So if that's a problem for you, then plenty of other podcasts you can listen to. Is that clear? I was going to say something else about that, I think. I don't remember. What was it? You go through all these phases, all these stages, all these stages. So when you say something like, well, this piece is difficult... Okay, so are you saying it's difficult from a stage one, stage two, or stage three perspective? I mean, which is it? There's so many, you gotta define these words. You just, don't just take it for granted that you know what it means and that everybody else knows what it means. And you might say, well, Michael, but you're just saying that because you're frustrated that you're not getting enough money. And you know, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, you can try to, you know, this call-out culture is just getting on my nerves. You know, there was a time not long ago when you didn't walk into Starbucks and say, ah, I see why you have a menu in here. I see why you put prices up there. You're looking for money. You know, we didn't used to do that. We used to say, oh, okay, I guess there's a coffee shop. I guess they're selling coffee. I see what you're doing. You only care about yourself. Uh-huh. You know, and you just knew, like, if Starbucks, like, has a sale of some kind, or if they do, you know, they're trying to, like, let's say they put music in there, they put some kind of decor where they're trying to, like, make the place look inviting. We didn't used to accuse them of having ulterior motives. You just understood, like, that's how it is. You know, you have a business. That's how they do it. You know, they try to make the product better, so that more people buy it, so they get more money. Sure, okay. Like, I don't know what to tell you. But those people are in stage two. You know, that's the obnoxious stage. You know? Fine. We'll play that game. So I hope that's been very, very helpful for you. I hope it helps you too when you're struggling with something, that you can contextualize it and to understand, like, well, what is it that I'm trying to do here? What am I considering to be my metric of success? Like, what are my values in this situation? Like, what do I care about in this situation? Who am I trying to please? Is it some external authority, some internal authority, some kind of, like, what? Is it a human being? Is it some kind of arbitrary rule? Is it some sort of, do I care about my feelings here? Do I care about my external performance? What is it? Do I care about the reaction of another person? If so, who? You got to figure that out. Be clear on that. Because if you're not clear on that, then you're confused and you're going to confuse everybody else. And people are going to run around in circles trying to solve your problems and the problems of the world. So that's life. I hope it's clear. I hope this is so useful for you. If it is useful, let me know. If it's not useful, let me know. I'd love to know why it's useful. I'd love to know why it's not useful, because that would all be very useful information for me. It is very difficult. You know, I put stuff out there and I don't get any responses, and then it's hard to know. It's hard to know if it's because not enough people saw it. It's hard to know if it's because the people who should have understood it didn't understand it, if I didn't explain it very well. It's hard to know if I just showed it to the wrong people. Maybe it wasn't even the right people who saw it. Maybe it wasn't enough people. Maybe it wasn't quite worded in the right way. Like, who knows? When I don't get any response, then it's just really, really hard to even know what to do with that information. I guess it's no information. So, okay, thanks for listening. Hope this was helpful.